Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you on this Thursday morning. We head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
Doing well, gents. How you doing this morning?
Doing awesome, man. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Charles, we discussed it earlier. The tush push still alive in the NFL. They do not get the required 24 votes from the owners to ban the tush push. So what do you make of the way this played out, and what do you make of how this sets up for future discussions of the tush push?
Well, I think it's interesting because you see, you know, the health and safety committee pushes against it, right? The competition committee pushes against it, and yet it remains. And it's rare to see, typically that kind of advisement the owners listen to. So, you know, I think the intrigue here is, why are they not listening? You know, why do you continue to have 10 teams? And it's obviously, I think it's getting closer to being banned, and I think it's headed in that direction. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets revisited, you know, a third time, and eventually this gets pushed through, because it's clearly what the commissioner wants. It's clearly what the advisement has been from a health and safety standpoint, which is like, hey, yeah, there's no injury data to show that something catastrophic is coming, but it is. And are you going to wait and then, you know, be reactionary rather than proactive about it? I thought it was interesting kind of to see, you know, the teams that voted to keep it in place. And, you know, you have like a Mike Vrabel inspired New England Patriots. That doesn't surprise me. When you look at Dan Campbell and the Lions, again, you know, you kind of have, look,
how about the Titans? Titans going against the league, which is a rare thing.
Yeah. The Titans too. And I, you know, it's, and I know the coaches and general managers weren't there, you know, ultimately for this vote, but you know, the mentality of some of the organizations, or at least the head coaches that are very head coach centric. And it doesn't surprise me, you know, John Harbaugh, it doesn't surprise me some of the organizations that voted to keep it in place. I was surprised, frankly, though, that I think the Eagles probably assumed that they had, you know, the Cardinals with Gannon there in their pocket, and they didn't, that they had, you know, the Colts with Steichen there in their pocket, and they didn't. I think maybe that was a little bit of a surprise, but it still feels like something, like the league's not going to let this go, particularly Commissioner, you know, Roger Goodell's not going to let it go. And I think part of it is there are teams that want it out of football realistically, and we've talked about this, because it's something that they cannot master, and the Eagles have, and it's given them a distinct edge. But I also think, particularly from the league office standpoint, I don't think they like the play. I think they think it's just a boring play. That they think it's just this, it's rote. You know, you see the same thing happen over and over again, and it's just, there's no really dynamic aspect of it. And I think that's part of why the league office wants to see it go away, because it's just frankly not exciting. And although I don't think they should ban it, I do agree. I mean, to me, I'm like, okay, here we go. All right, let's just get this over with. Like, line up, go, do what you're going to do, and let's move on. And I think that's an aspect of the game that, particularly when you see Philly win a Super Bowl, you know, they just don't want to see this another, you know, season of Jalen Hurts scoring, what was it, 14 touchdowns, 15 touchdowns, you know, out of this formation.
Am I wrong to think that Goodell is going through a period of particular heavy-handedness? This tush push is him. The playoff reseeding is him. And what do you know about the mechanics of him getting Green Bay to take on one of his issues, getting Detroit to take on one of his issues? What are the deals made? What do these teams potentially get? Or they just get a marker for taking on these things? Detroit making it very clear throughout the process, hey, this isn't us. We're really just doing this for Roger.
Right. I can't say what the marker will be determined. Like, let's see, you know, down the line. What,
it's nice to have.
You know, well, you know, Detroit, is it payback for the draft? You know, do you owe Roger Goodell for Detroit landing the on-site draft? Green Bay, do you owe Roger Goodell? Do you ever think about that?
Like, yeah, maybe it's a marker payback.
Yeah, think about the last two, you know, cities that landed the NFL draft. I mean, look, no offense to Detroit and no offense to Green Bay, but was anybody sitting there going, yeah, those were logical places for the draft to end up, particularly in Detroit? Like, it didn't seem like a logical, you know, landing spot for them to host an NFL draft. You know, you could argue Green Bay, okay, small town, you know, but it's all about football. You know, you'll be able to talk about the numbers, which they did. You know, hey, here's what the populace is. And Green Bay, you know, tripled in the size of population when the draft came through. You know, those are great storylines, but I do think, I don't want to get too conspiratorial here, but I do think that is a chip now that the league can play. I think they know that NFL teams want to host the draft and make it an event now that they've seen, you know, what has happened in other cities. And I think it's, you know, you think about it, you bring up the two teams, you're like, why are they carrying water? But they're also the last two teams to host an NFL draft. And I do think there is an element, just like the Super Bowl. You and I, PK, you and I both know, the league uses that. You know, they use the Super Bowl as a carrot, right? If you just built a new stadium, we're gonna get a Super Bowl to you, right? Regardless of where you are, wherever you are, we'll figure out a way to work you into the Super Bowl rotation at least one time, because you've got this fancy new stadium that ultimately you want to show off. I think it's an interesting conspiracy to think about, and in the future, as they award the draft to different cities, you know, kind of pay attention to what the relationship is in terms of those teams and what the league ultimately is spearheading out in you know, whether it's rules or whatever else, whatever agenda they want to push.
Saw clips of your panel discussion on Yahoo about the Brock Purdy contract. And the pro Purdy side was basically, and it's hard to argue with, this is what it costs. Like, yeah, your quarterback, if he's successful to a certain degree and you want him, that's the price tag, and you just swallow it. The other side was, you know, you plan ahead and you get out of it because you don't feel he's that good, and you move him for assets because you find him replaceable. Wasn't there a scenario there where San Francisco maybe could have gone to Darnold, who they had familiarity with, who obviously was significantly cheaper, who maybe they could get similar production from and save themselves a lot of money? Do you think that was ever in play in their thinking?
I don't think it was ever in play. I mean, I can only tell you from my interactions with, like, John Lynch the last 2 years, it was really clear. You know, at every turn, they were very clear about, this is our quarterback, this is who we're going with, this is who we're going to extend, it's going to get done. You know, yeah, there may be some pains, you know, getting every, you know, I dotted and T crossed, and what's the number ultimately going to be, but I don't think there was ever any wavering on their part in terms of him ultimately being the guy. And I think part of that was, you know, kind of going through the end of Jimmy Garoppolo and then Trey Lance not working out. And I think in the organization, there was a little bit of relief that, hey, this guy saved us. I mean, we made a massive mistake. It could have crippled our franchise. And, you know, whether you want to argue like, hey, Mike Shanahan champion, the bottom line is your last pick in the draft. You passed him a million times. You got lucky, right? You just got lucky. And, you know, I think there was some fear of going back and risking it by whether it's a Sam Darnold, who, just like Purdy, you could argue is a product of his environment in Minnesota. And we still have no idea what he's going to look like when he's not surrounded by an all-star cast of skill position players. And, you know, could he have, look, Kyle Shanahan has always had an affinity for Kirk Cousins. Could they have made the Kirk Cousins play? That would have been cheaper too. I just think they feel like if they could get the deal done and it wasn't a market reset at the quarterback spot, it was ultimately going to happen. And the fact that to get it at the seventh slot, you know, amongst quarterbacks, and as you said, PK, and I made the argument, if you're going to have a good quarterback, not even a great quarterback, you're going to have a good quarterback, you're going to pay him. It's just how it works nowadays. And if your answer is to not pay him, you show me the alternative and how that's ultimately going to work, because Seattle went that route with Geno Smith. What happened? Nothing. You know, I mean, what did you really produce ultimately going that route with Geno Smith? There's been a multitude of teams that have gone that route, and it's all about how you build around them and the draft picks that you hit on, and really that's what's, to me, that's the sauce right now in San Francisco. You got to hit on the draft picks. They have to get better at drafting and putting cheap contracts around him. That's ultimately going to be what makes this worthwhile or not.
So, Charles, obviously sad news yesterday with the passing of Jim Irsay in Indianapolis at the age of 65. And you put together a really interesting piece at Yahoo, kind of talking about the complicated legacy of Jim Irsay and everything that goes into that. So, you know, without giving away that entire piece there, but just your quick synopsis on Jim Irsay, his career, and the legacy that he now leaves behind.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was a mixed bag. Let's be honest. Like, he was the critics. It was a lot of messiness to him as an NFL owner. And you know, I think the thing to me that was intriguing is, you know, a lot of owners take great pains to hide the problems they have in their lives or the mistakes that they make, or talk about kind of where they came from, particularly if you inherit the team as a child. You know, you're a child of an NFL owner, and then you are gifted this ability to be an NFL owner, whereas, you know, other NFL owners had to go out there and, you know, make their way through the world, make their fortune, and then buy into being an NFL owner. It's a very different position to be, you know, part of the nepotism that happens in the NFL. And I don't feel like he ever ran from that. I thought it was really interesting. And to me, I felt like when I heard that he had died, it didn't take me long to sit there and consider, like, his defining moment was this time in the NFL when the league is trying to get, you know, Dan Snyder out. You have all these owners that are trying to get Dan Snyder out. There's congressional hearings, and there's investigation after investigation. There's a suspension. And you just had no owner who stood up and said, yeah, you know what? There's grounds to kick him, to boot him, right? And then the guy who delivers the message, and he did it purposefully. That was the interesting thing to me. If you go back to that October meeting in 2022.
Sought out microphones, right?
Absolutely. Walked through the Conrad lobby, went straight to reporters. And it was like, this dude knew what he was doing. And he walked up and he just laid it out. He said, yeah, there's merit to launching them, to getting rid of them. And it was a shocking moment because we don't see that. We don't see that inside the fraternity where you see them go after each other. And especially just as blunt and bold as possible. And what was intriguing to me at the time, and I even thought about it then, I was like, this came at a time when we were hearing that Dan Snyder was basically holding a knife, you know, to all these other owners saying, you want to do this? All right, I'll play dirty. And you got secrets? People are going to find out what's going on. They're going to find out whatever your dirt is. You took the guy who had an immense amount of dirt, and he was weaponized. But the way you could weaponize him was his dirt was already out there. Everybody knew he had gone to rehab, that he had gotten the DUI arrest, the 6-game suspension, the multitude of other things that had happened, that he'd been out there talking about substance abuse issues and struggling with mental health and, you know, the problems he had inside his own family and all these different things. He couldn't be – what was Snyder going to do? It was already out there. So this was the right guy at the right time to step out there. And I think that's sort of, at least in my mind, part of his defining legacy was he was the one who stood up, and we knew at that point, oh, yeah, Snyder's probably done. Like, this looks like this is finished because this has never happened before. And, you know, like I said, it's part of a complicated legacy for him. And I will say this real quick about him. I do think he gets shorted. They should have won more titles with Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. He lamented that for a long time. I think right up until his death. But I will give him credit. He was the one who hired Bill Polian. He was the one who, when the team landed in his lap, he went to the owners' meetings and he listened to Wellington Mara. He listened to Dan Rooney. He listened to the advice of people who had done it better than the Colts had done it. And then he made some hires that turned the Colts into an organization that had an immense amount of success for 16 years, won a Super Bowl, changed the NFL in some ways offensively. And, you know, I think he should get at least some credit for that. It shouldn't all go to Peyton Manning. It shouldn't all go to Bill Polian. He did make some good decisions in that run.
Charles, the NFL owners, obviously, making a push for the Olympics and the players playing in the Olympics in 2028. That looks like it's going to happen. And we were talking the other day on the show about, like, how many players, when it comes down to it, are really going to be all in and interested on this. So what's your thought on Olympics, flag football, and NFL players participating in 2028?
Well, we'll see when push comes to shove, because it's interesting that Justin Jefferson gets up there and he talks about, you know, this being something that obviously he's a proponent for. Guys talk about dreaming about it, and then he's noncommittal about ultimately whether he's going to play. But let's be fair. It's in 2028. Like, that's a while down the road. There's a lot to be straightened out. We don't know what players that we're staring at and saying, well, that this guy's so dynamic, he needs to be a part of the flag football team. I think there's so many questions to work out. I love you guys to tell me this. How do you do this? Like, what is this going to look like? I mean, do guys play both ways in flag football in the Olympics? Like, tell me how developmentally you build this team. And moreover, can you make mistakes? Like, is it, I see people naming their flag football team. Like, is it that easy? Do we just go, let's just take the best athletes and throw them out there?
Everybody presumes that it's that easy.
Right.
You're just going to throw it up and your guy's going to jump and catch it. And we're that physically dominant.
And so that's my question. Is that true? Like, I don't know if that's true or not. And it was funny because I was talking to a personnel guy in the AFC, and he said to me, he goes, look, man, down in Texas, I watched, you know, football for years and years and years on the personnel side. And he said, you would see in high school, you would see some of the worst high school teams, like just bottom of the barrel, would be the absolute best 7-on-7 teams. They couldn't win a game on a high school football field to save their lives, but they would go and win 7-on-7 championship after championship, you know, in the summer, in the spring. And he said, it's not the same. It's just not. He's like, you just because you're staring at guys who are absolute great all-world football players in the NFL structure doesn't mean they're going to be necessarily all-world flag football players. And so I hear that. I can't tell you if that's true or not. I don't know. I literally have no – I'd sit here and I'm spending all this time trying to figure out, like, just answer me this question. Is there a wrong way to do this? Because that's what you want to avoid, you know. Is there a wrong way to build this team? And I don't know what that answer ultimately is. That's the fascinating part of this for the next 3 years, is seeing how exactly this is going to function, how a team should be built, and – you know, who is going to be there in 2028? And really, it'll be before, obviously. We'll know along the way because people are going to have to try out and want to play there. And I did talk to, you know, George Atala, who was in the union for 16 years as an executive. And, you know, Atala was like, look, I've been talking to players about this whole Olympic experience and flag football for years. And he swears up and down, the Stars want it. You know, he's like, the Stars want to play. They want to be part of this. And, you know, we'll see ultimately if that's what's happening, if that's what does happen. I'll say this to you guys. You know, NFL players have egos, right? We all know that. Everybody wants to flash their Super Bowl ring and they want to count rings and all these different things. 53 plus Super Bowl rings get, you know, handed out every year. If it's 12 gold medals every 4 years, you're going to tell me that some of these NFL players aren't sitting there going, yeah, I want to be the guy with the medal. I want to be the guy who only gets one of those 12 things every 4 years. You can brag on your Super Bowl ring where 53 plus are handed out every year, but I got a gold medal that almost nobody's going to have in the league.
Charles, what's your take on all the Kayla Williams noise that's been out there over the last week of the book coming out from Wickersham and the comments from his dad about maybe trying to circumvent the draft process and not end up in Chicago? I mean, obviously they've moved on from that coaching staff now. But I have to imagine, like, especially if he gets off to a rough start and doesn't play well, that's probably not the last time we're going to hear about that in Chicago.
It's not great, right? It's more noise, and it's a reminder of the pre-draft noise where it was like, okay, you know, here's the painted nails and the pink phone and like how he talks about his teammates and how he carries himself and all. And then meanwhile, at the same time, we were having all these conversations, you know, they're potentially thinking about lawyering up to do what, you know, or go play in another league that's not the NFL, which is laughable to me. It's not, on one hand, I will say this, their assessment of that staff and it kind of being the crap show that it was correct. They were right.
It was.
Like it was, they were not wrong in that respect. So you have to give them that. But you can't have, like, how long are we going to do this? If he goes out and he wins, nobody's going to care, right? If they go out and Ben Johnson's great and he turns in the right direction, this all becomes, you know, whatever. It's the prologue to what they finally got to. But if you're right, if he struggles with Ben Johnson and there are issues, yeah, this is going to come up. It's going to be talked about again. And at the very least, I think it's embarrassing for the Bears front office, right, that this all occurred behind the scenes, and then now it comes out, you know, what the thought process was, because the front office is still there. like the coaching staff's gone, but the front office is still there. So, you know, they didn't have a high opinion of the Bears, and not everybody's gone. So that's something I think that ultimately lingers. But wins and losses, that's all that matters. Just it's same with Tennessee. You know, how many times are we going to talk about Callahan and whether he's going to be there or not, and you know what's the offensive line look like? The wins and losses are going to dictate it. The success of a young quarterback, that's going to dictate whether or not people lose their jobs.
You have a sense of this Favre Netflix deal yet? I haven't had a chance to dig in.
I've been hearing that it's coming. I saw the trailer for it. I'm excited to see it. I'm definitely excited to see it, and it's I think to me, what's interesting about this is before, you know, all the welfare fraud stuff and all those things that came out, I think it's interesting. They're going to go back to the Jen Sturger stuff with the, you know, sending her pictures of his parts. And I always thought to me, it was interesting that he kind of escaped that. His era was before people really care. Like yeah. it kind of got, not that it wasn't a thing at the time, but it was remarkable to me that he retired like on the doorstep of what would have been an NFL investigation. He would have been, I believe, suspended. And it would have, I think, been a bigger deal in terms of how people looked at Brett Favre. And maybe the questions would have been a little louder about, like, what kind of guy is this? I think that's what this is going to be about. But, you know, I haven't seen it, but I've heard, you know, some of the stuff that's going to be in there. And I'm very, very interested to see how this impacts his legacy, which up until this point, I think has still remained, aside from the welfare, you know, fraud stuff, has remained intact in terms of the league's embrace of him and how he's talked about in terms of sort of the lineage of, you know, Green Bay and Minnesota and the things that he accomplished.
Charles, you'll be happy to know Rex Rhodes sustained a tick bite earlier this week, was in great fear of Lyme disease, and has since come out on the other side of it. He's all good.
He's fine. Don't worry.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like
two tick bites, I think.
He texted us Sunday night, and he was like, hey, I got a big problem. Like, I'm going to have to leave halfway through the show on Monday and go check out a tick bite. He was very concerned about Lyme disease, but I think he's okay.
Okay, so he's the first person I've ever known in my life. I'm 48, and I've never known anyone who's gotten bitten by a tick. How did this happen?
I don't know what he was doing. Like, he thinks it may have been when he was walking the dogs, but it's hard to imagine Rexro just, like, walking through the fields out there, you know, in the jungle or out there in the woods. Like, he doesn't seem like that kind of guy.
He's a dog walker, though. That's his big thing. But more importantly, Charles, we know that on National Gout Awareness Day, you're holding a thought for Joe and everyone who suffers from gout.
Gout and ticks. We are
great combo.
Hold back. If you're really in solidarity, you will hold back on red meat and meat today.
Red meat and shellfish. I'll steer clear.
Just stay away.
Which, by the way, should tell you my knowledge of gout is probably an indicator of whether or not I've ever worried.
Well, it's strictly from Joe. We've all learned about gout from Joe, yeah. So we have him to thank.
We do.
Yeah, gout. go out and ski a tika.
Yeah. Really got to watch out for the ski a tika as well. Charles, great stuff, brother. Appreciate you taking time to be with us, and we'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Have a good morning.
Charles Robinson, our guest. Lots to react to there from Charles. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Tune in to 102.5 The Game tonight for your SEC baseball tournament coverage. Listen as number 4 seed Vanderbilt takes on Oklahoma at Hoover Metropolitan Complex in Hoover, Alabama. First pitch at approximately 6:30. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon. Big bank muscle, small bank hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Ian Safar here with you. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. BK, interesting response that he had on the Goodell stuff there. You know, I never thought about it in those terms of, you know, Green Bay just had the draft. Detroit had the draft recently. And both of those teams are sponsoring things that, you know, through some reporting, it's been clearly uncovered that Roger Goodell and the NFL don't like the tush-push, and they'd like to see it banned. The playoff seeding conversation that we had that Detroit put together as a rule proposal clearly has come from the NFL as well. So interesting to think about it that way in terms of, like, I don't know, basically, for lack of a better term, repaying the NFL potentially for giving your team the draft at that point.
Hey, do us a solid in exchange for that. I mean, there are all kinds of deals that go on like that. I was struck by the Titans voting against it because there's not that much that comes public about teams aligning with the league or not aligning with the league. But my perception of the Titans is always that they've been viewed as a good soldier. And Bud certainly this is kind of lines up with that draft thing. When the league went along with the Titans move, with the Oilers move to Nashville, he certainly gave up his, I don't want to say gave up his vote, but he pretty much agreed that he would go along with what the league wanted on big matters for an extended period of time. So the Titans were in the league's yes column for a lot of important stuff for a long time after the league helped them get here.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about from that perspective, like how common are things like this in the NFL, just in terms of, I mean, maybe deals is the wrong word, but like doing somebody a solid for, you know, like the Titans. I think the stadium example is perfect, right? Charles brings up, you know, you get this shiny new stadium, we'll make sure you get a Super Bowl one time. Like just stuff like that. How often does that happen around the NFL? It's interesting to think about.
And it's another thing, too, that, some teams need the league's help on stuff a lot more than other
yep.
teams. Certainly, and work with the league more often. If you're getting a stadium built, you're working with Park Avenue on some stuff that other teams aren't working with people on Park Avenue on as often.
Yep.
You know, and so they might have more occasions to be on the phone with you and say, "Hey, by the way, what about X?" Stuff like that.
PK, we have a new award in the NFL, the Protector of the Year for offensive linemen. This was announced yesterday. NFL Executive VP of Football Ops, Troy Vincent, putting it out there. Also giving credit to Deion Dawkins, the left tackle for the Bills, and Andrew Whitworth, obviously the longtime great player in the NFL, for basically having this thing created and pushing for the creation of the award. But the Protector of the Year, which will go to the league's best offensive lineman, now part of the awards at the end of the year.
In much of what I've heard and read about this, it's been said like there's never been an offensive line award. And so I was reading today an interesting piece by John Turney, who's very much a league historian. And he writes for Talk of Fame, which is a site run by Clark Judge, who's a Hall of Fame voter, a colleague of mine who I talk to periodically about Hall of Fame matters, and who asks me to contribute like a paragraph once in a while to one of these pieces he's doing there on the Hall of Fame issues and the like. And this is an interesting piece because it includes some Oilers stuff. So this piece is about Leon Gray, who played with John Hanna for the Patriots. Leon Gray, Hall of Fame talent as New England's left tackle in the 1970s, he sets him up as. And Hanna's making a case for Leon Gray as a Hall of Fame candidate. And in this piece, he says he broke, he's talking of Gray, Hanna, one of the great offensive linemen of all time, right? He says of Gray, he broke my string of being named Offensive Lineman of the Year.
Yeah.
It was an award they gave every year at that time, and I'd won a few times in a row. He broke my string, and I was glad for him. He deserved it. He should absolutely be in the Hall of Fame. So I was struck by this coming out at this time where this Protective of the Year is being sold as like the first offensive line award that John Hanna had won something called Offensive Lineman of the Year several times and that Gray then had taken it away from him.
Well, it makes sense to have an award like this. I'm interested to see how do they go about awarding it.
Well,
like who's in charge of it?
Yeah, what's unclear is it's you know the AP
right.
panel votes for and selects MVP and Offensive and Defensive Player of the Year and Comeback Player of the Year and Coach of the Year and all of these things. So are they adding it to the AP ballot or is this some separate NFL selected
right.
Offensive Lineman of the Year? I like it. I'm all for it. I think it's a great idea. They don't get enough recognition, but there's not much clarity as to how it comes to exist.
They're just going to go by like PFF rankings. Like this guy's number one. He wins the award. The Protector of the Year. I kind of like the name of it, too, rather than just Offensive Lineman of the Year.
It sounds
Protector
cool.
of the Year kind of sounds pretty cool.
But it also downgrades your run blocking, it
feels
does. Like.
It right? does. It's part of being an offensive lineman. Half of it. 615-737-1025, our phone number. One more segment with PK for the day. Coming up next, got some your thoughts to get to on the Titans and NFL front. We will do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Paul Kuharski with me here on the program. Taking some of your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Skyler says they should have a worse Protector of the Year. Can you imagine all the awards the Titans tackles would have won over
that
the past
lobby
few years.
Would be just loaded with hardware.
It is just a run the Titans are on right now. It is Dennis Daly
from
Award.
Daly
over
to
here.
Dillard to NPF, Ooh. A 3-year streak. Unparalleled.
Beautiful. Can't wait to see if NPF and Dillard get on the field for San Francisco. That'll be fun. Gino on the text line says no primetime games for the Titans. Voting against or voting the tush-push vote was Amy giving the middle finger back to the NFL.
It absolutely was not. I hope he's joking. That they would connect those two things is ridiculous.
I got one texter going back to the Brock Purdy conversation. Says the only reason Purdy is a conversation is because of where he was drafted. If he'd been a first-rounder with the same resume, there's no question he gets this contract, period. It's from an unnamed text on the text line. What do you make of the Brock Purdy contract?
I agree that's – I think this is a league problem. Now, it's not – what is he, seventh, I think Charles said?
Yeah, I believe so,
but
in AAV.
I do think they're doing a better job of finding some sort of middle ground for quarterbacks that deserve middle pay. Like Darnold's deal was pretty reasonable. Geno Smith's deal seemed pretty reasonable. But there is a point, there was a point where just like if you are a second contract quarterback, you get like premier quarterback money. And I think that for a time was kind of broken in the league. I think they're recovering it from it somewhat. But the gap between Burrow, Mahomes, Allen, and Brock Purdy needs to be significant. I haven't looked at the numbers to see if it's significant enough. But once upon a time, not too long ago, it was not significant enough.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's why, you know.
Because it's based on franchise tags.
It is.
And franchise tags are based on the average of the salaries of the top guys. And the top guys make a bleep ton of money.
But that,
and Brock Purdy shouldn't be connected to that bleep ton of money because he's not on par with those guys.
And some of this is on, like, the owners in the NFL as a whole, too, though, because, like, last offseason is a good example. Like, Trevor Lawrence got $55 million a year. Tua got paid. Jordan Love got paid. And, you know, those guys are different in terms of, you know, the pendulum
and
of
those are guys
how
I'm
much
talking
they've
about.
Done.
Those guys are overpaid.
They're good. They're good players.
But they're overpaid.
They've not proven that yet. But the NFL gave them the money. Like, it's on the owners, too, of like, yeah, we're not giving you this. Like, it's just not happening at that. But they won't and can't do that based on where the market
and,
is.
That's the thing. If you say, I'm not giving you that, well, a team that has nothing at quarterback will absolutely overpay for a Tua or a Love, who is substantially better than their alternatives.
Exactly. So, like, I get it. It's the price of doing business in the NFL. But I'm with you. Like, there should be a very significant gap between Mahomes and Allen and Burrow and Jackson and some of these other guys that we're talking about.
So that's where, like, Purdy, to me, maybe could have been the test case of somebody saying, you know what? Go ahead and play somewhere else.
Yeah.
You're not going to be nearly as good as you've been under Shanahan. And we found you. We can find somebody. And to me, Darnold would have been the guy. Because Darnold was there, and they loved Darnold. And part of the reason Darnold was good in Minnesota is because of what he learned in San Francisco. And they loved him. And so you could have, but you know, to me, from afar, I look at that and say, well, you could have saved a ton of money by moving to Darnold for far less, invested that money in other resources on a veteran-laden team, and watched Purdy go somewhere else and not, you know. Now, you're being loyal and all of that. I understand that. And he saved you, like Charles was talking about, after the Trey Lance, you know, disaster. But how much loyalty do you owe there? It's not really a loyalty business.
PK? Great stuff again today. You're going to be back tomorrow for one more.
One more little homework assignment that I worked on during the show. It appears all of the NBA and NHL schedules will be conflicting for the rest of the conference finals.
Terrible.
Yeah. Right at it.
Terrible.
Well, you'd think there would be a way.
Are there any blank nights?
No, it's every other.
Yeah.
It's every other night.
At least there are no blank nights. I mean, it's unavoidable then. Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
PK back for one more day tomorrow. And we'll get after it on the Titans Talk again. We got a lot of things to get into on tomorrow's shows. TD will be with us as well.
See ya.
Jason Big Joe coming up next. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.